Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to your Partner in Success Radio, hosted by serial entrepreneur Denise Griffiths. Denise offers a full menu of on-the-web services for all your online needs. Denise and her team of virtual assistants can help manage your online business, including social media channels, blogs, web portals, and more. YourOfficeOnTheWeb.com is a comprehensive resource to help you combine the power of your brand, your connections, and innovative ideas to develop a full online strategy that can guarantee a strong profitable impact on your business.
Good morning and welcome to your Partner in Success Radio. I'm your host, Denise Griffiths, and my mission every week is to bring you the most interesting entrepreneurs and business people that I can find. And these people are excited to freely share their business wisdom, their tips, and actionable advice for us each week. I'll be honest with you, I walk away from these shows every week with a, oh my gosh, moment. I learned so much from these programs. Today, I welcome to the show Jimmy Burgess. Jimmy is someone who has experienced the highs and the lows of life in a big, big way. He has seen financial abundance only to lose it all. He has seen good health and experienced health issues that incapacitated him for months at a time, not just a day off of work, months at a time. He has experienced easy times and difficult times in relationships, as we all have, but through every setback, he has bounced back stronger and better than he was before. Along his journey, he found 7 easy-to-follow steps that helped him and others, throughout his history and theirs, to be able to bounce back from life's setbacks, and this led him to authoring the book, What Just Happened? How to Bounce Back in Life So You Can Do More, Have More, and Be More. And as Jimmy shared with me during the pre-show interview, which we should have recorded, it was that good, he was a millionaire at age 35, lost everything and bounced back from bankruptcy very quickly by starting a new company in an industry that he had no previous experience in. I've got to hear that story. Jimmy also says that the biggest benefit of bouncing back from financial ruin was that it wasn't just about the money. It took him losing everything money could buy, in order to appreciate and have all the things that money couldn't buy. His is an amazing and inspiring story, and I hope you will join us in the chat room during the program. If you can't join us live today, you can also download the interview after it's over on Blog Talk Radio, or you can find us on iTunes. Jimmy, welcome. I'm so glad to have you here.
I'm excited to be here, Denise. Thanks for having me.
Oh, listen, I have to share this story. Jimmy actually reached out to me and said, listen, this is what I'm up to. This is what I'm doing. He sent me the most comprehensive proposal for a guest spot that I've ever seen. I was impressed.
I
was impressed
you.
Enough.
Well,
I picked
you.
Up the phone and went, call me. This is real good.
It's
so
amazing. Marketing works no matter what business you're in, doesn't it? It's amazing.
Does.
And
yeah.
And
you did such
when it's
a good
focused
job.
On trying to help others. You know, Denise,
right,
when it's focused
right.
on trying to help others. And that's why I'm so excited to be here today, is to share with your listeners that if they're in a struggle, that it's they don't have to stay there. There is a way to get out of it. So thanks for having me.
Oh, listen, it's my pleasure. I've read the book that you sent me. It's a great book. I'm not all the way through it because I actually printed it out, and I keep annotating it. It's got sticky notes, and I've got a yellow pen and a pink pen and a green pen.
Oh, great. Great.
I'm working on it. But anyway, tell people a little bit about you, because you've got an amazing story, but tell people where they can find you, and then I've got a ton of questions for you.
Sure. I guess I kind of need to give my background. I was, like a lot of people, I was in a job, Denise, where I was making a living but not a life, if anybody can relate to that, and it wasn't my passion. And I just woke up every day, and I'd sit there and watch the clock to see what time I could leave. I was, I'd been told I was going to get this raise that would, that I felt like would give me the ability to take care better care of my family, would give me a little more purpose, maybe more excitement about what I was doing. And at the end of that year, it just didn't happen. And I finally got sick and tired of being sick and tired. And I kind of looked inward. I said, if things are going to change for me, I've got to change. And so I began to try to focus on what is it that other people need or that they want. I love the quote, and I think we've all heard it from Zig Ziglar about, you know, that you if you just help enough other people get what they want, then you will have and get everything that you want. And it's so true. Right. And so that's what I did. Well, with doing that, I left that job at the bank as a commercial lending officer. And within a year of leaving, my annual salary had become my monthly average income. And then within 2 years, my annual salary at the bank was now my average biweekly income. And when those things happen, you know, and money starts coming in so fast, for me at least, I kind of lost focus on who I really was. I began to think that it was about me, my pride, my ego got involved. And I began to make decisions that just didn't make sense. And I made bad decisions because I thought it was bulletproof, you know, one after the other. And the next thing you know, I wake up and, well, I won't ever forget the day. It was May 9th of 2009. And I sat in the parking lot in Pensacola, Florida, of the federal bankruptcy court with my wife there. And literally, I had taken a blessing that financially should have set my family up for life, and I just blown it. And I sat there, and that's where the title of the book comes. You know, what just happened? That's what I was thinking, is what just how could I let myself get my family in this position where I have to start over completely? And, you know, those things don't happen overnight, so it took a while to unwind everything and to get to that point. And there was a time about maybe 3 to 4 months before we actually had to file the bankruptcy that I just remember I was getting back to focusing on the things. I began to think, you know, I've got to get back to what was working instead of, you know, worrying all the time. And I was listening to a CD by the motivational speaker, Les Brown, and he said something that just struck my heart. He said, in his big booming voice, he said, "Your struggle has not come to stay, it's come to pass." And it was like it pierced my soul. And all of a sudden, Denise, I started thinking, you know, I don't have to stay here. I began to start to look for things, and I found hope where I had been worried before. I began to find inspiration where I had found things that just held me back. And so all of a sudden, I got off my heels where I was waiting on everything, and I was reacting to things, and I began to get back on my toes and start making the world react to me. And when I did that, things changed very quickly, and we bounced back very quickly financially. But what was amazing is after that bankruptcy and after us bouncing back, I remember about 9 months after it and thinking, wow, this is amazing. And I looked around, and it wasn't even about the money. You know, my relationship with my family, my wife, was better than it ever had been. Health-wise, at 43, I was in better shape than I was at 23, you know. And so all of these things, when things are happening good for you like that, people notice. And a lot of us have gone through struggles, you know, lately, especially financially.
That's just the condition of life.
It really is. And I had some friends that said, "What are you doing? Can you help me?" And so I did. We sat down and formulated a plan, and they said, "You know, you need to talk about this." And I began speaking at a few places, and people were like, "You need to write about this." And I did more research on what we had done, and all of a sudden we began to see patterns where there were really just 7 steps. And so out of that is where the book came. And it's so exciting to be able to share this message of hope and understanding that the struggle that whoever is listening right now is in, it hasn't come to stay, it's come to pass. And so I'm just excited to be here with you today and be able to share this.
Well, I'm excited too, because let me tell you, we all do it. And, you know, I've been broke, I've been poor, and it sucks. I don't like it. Don't want to do it again.
Absolutely.
But here's the thing. I mean, in these days, I think, and this is my personal observation, I genuinely think that the rise of entrepreneurship will save America. I really do think that. And there are so many things that are happening now that I know there's a lot of very scared people out there going, "Oh my gosh, am I going to have a job? What about, you know, where is my money going? What's going on?" And here's the thing. I think they really just need to do what you did and what I did, and that's just to change your mind. And I know that's an oversimplification, but you just have to change your mind and say, "I'm not going to sit here, as you said so eloquently, on my heels and wait. I'm going to do something about it."
Right.
It's
so true.
You know, it's hard to come out of a place of fear. It really is, because it can wrap you up and stick you under the chair and leave you there. It's hard. It's hard to do.
there's nothing easy about it. But,
no.
You know, what I found, and it's uncomfortable, to be perfectly frank, but you know what I found is that in my life, I realized that in order for me to grow, growth and comfort can't coexist. They just can't. And so I had to learn to get comfortable being uncomfortable where I was growing. If you think about it like physically, if you go work out and when you get done, you aren't a little bit sore, odds are you didn't grow as much as you needed to. If there's a little mm-hmm. soreness in your muscles are growing. You're getting stronger. And so it's the same way in life. I mean, I think we have to learn to be comfortable being a little bit uncomfortable.
I agree. So tell me about your health problems, just kind of in general. What happened? I mean, was it as a result of the stress and the fear and the anxiety?
You know, that's absolutely. You know, I don't know if everybody realizes this, but if you look up the word disease, the opposite of that is at ease, being at ease.
Mm-hmm.
And if you've been in any kind of struggle, you know the last thing you are is at ease at that time. You know, the stress levels are through the roof. And it ended up with me, I lost my voice for 3 months before I ended up. And yeah, I mean, and when you can't talk, and that's how I made my living was communication and sales, it shuts everything down. And, you know, and I couldn't really communicate with my employees correctly. And I ended up in Tennessee at Vanderbilt Voice Clinic, I'm 35 years old. And to be perfectly frank, going into this for 3 months, I was angry. I was angry that I couldn't get back to work. I was angry that I couldn't communicate right. And in reality, I was even angry probably with God about wondering, you know, why are you punishing me? You know, that's the kind of questions we all have, you know?
Right, that's normal.
It is. When I got up there and that doctor, I walked in, and it's Dr. Ossoff up there, world-renowned. He has got all these things on his wall of these people that he's treated for their voice. And, you know, you've got – even it has a People magazine article where he's treated Bill Clinton when he was president and helped him with his voice problems. And it's got all these country music stars and everybody thanking this doctor. Yeah, and so it is a situation where –
No, I'm joking. If he had never caught his voice back, I would have been happy. That's just me. Of course, I'm that way about all politicians,
understand.
So nobody take it personally. I think they all lie.
I know. It was the main thing it did for me when I was sitting there. I was thinking, well, if they're going to bring the president of the United States here to work on his voice, then obviously I'm in somewhere this guy can fix me, you know. And so I kind of got a little cocky there. I was thinking, you know, this guy's going to give me the magic pill. I can get back to work tomorrow. Well, after about a full day's worth of them doing these tests, he's sitting there, and I'm there with my wife, and he points, he's got the video of the scope they had run down, they'd done 3 or 4 of these, and he's pointing with a laser printer and talking to his intern there. Well, we can understand them, you know, they're saying things, and he says, this is your vocal cords, and he's pointing up there, and this is your false vocal cords, can you see a difference? And, you know, of course, I whisper, yes, I can, because I still can't talk, and he says, that's what we call an abnormality, and it's a something that we really need to get checked out immediately. And, of course, you know, if you've ever had a doctor tell you that he sees an abnormality, at 35 years old, it literally shook me to my core. I mean, it got my attention.
Oh, I bet. Yeah.
Scared me to death. He kept talking for five. I didn't hear a word he said. You know, they rushed me to the other side of the hospital to do this MRI on my throat. And I remember my mom, my stepfather, and my wife were there with me. And, you know, I didn't tell them obviously what I was concerned, but I remember that nurse, she put the little dye thing and she said, now when I close this door, I'm going to be in the other room with the other doctor, you know, and we'll be out of the room and your family's there in the waiting room. And I just remember that steel door closing, that kaboom, you know, behind her, and I just felt utterly alone, you know, and just all of a sudden I began to cry, to be honest, and I just, you know, I just said, what am I doing? You know, what's going on? And I prayed like I never prayed, and I prayed for, you know, just open my eyes to the things to be thankful for. And, you know, when that got done, by the time she comes in, you know, she said, you're all set. Well, now both my collars are wet with tears, and I'm just, you know, and I wipe my face off. I don't even say anything to my wife, you know, at the moment. But I walked out of there a different man. You know, I walked out of there with a different understanding of how fragile life could be, and luckily we got a call pretty quick telling us that, hey, it was just a clear cyst, and they thought that they could, you know, they would fix it with some voice therapy and new medication. And a month later, we went back up there after all this, and it was clear, and it was amazing to see how quickly I bounced back from that. But part of it was the day we got back. Part of it was that I was sitting there thinking, "Is Lord, just let me be thankful for my wife that's been standing with me mm-hmm. through all of this, you know." And I remember her bringing medicine into me in the bed the day we got back, and it was kind of like if you've ever seen those pop-up ads. It was like when she left, she smiled at me, and when she walked away, it was like that pop-up ad popped up above her, and it was like she meant it, you know, she meant it mm-hmm. when it said, you know, for better or for worse, for richer or for poorer, for in good health and bad. And all of a sudden, I just had a new appreciation for her. And that afternoon, my kids come home from school, and I'm asleep. I hear them come through the front door, and my daughters, that in reality, because those of us that are workaholics, a lot of times it's hard to have balance.
Yes, I know.
I know you do uh-huh. in our conversation. So
it's tough.
For these two young girls, the part of their lives, a big part of it, the only... You know, for days at a time, the only real interaction we would have was me kissing them on the forehead when I left when they were still asleep or when I got home and they were already asleep. And so here they are. They run into this room and they crawl up in the bed with their sick dad, you know, and I'm mm-hmm. and I'm sitting there and I'm thinking, you know, we're talking about their day and I haven't done this in months. And all of a sudden I start to realize, what a blessing. You know, why am I blowing this off and just thinking that these things the world tells me are important, that I'm putting priority over what's really important. And once I began to get these priorities back, Denise, it spilled over to everything. It spilled over to my relationships, to my finances, to my spirituality, to mm-hmm. everybody around me. It made a difference. So I didn't mean to go so long, but I just want you to feel and understand.
Yeah, I'm so glad you did. And one of the things that while you were talking, I was thinking, you know, you are truly a very lucky and very blessed man. I mean, if your kids had been a little bit older and were able to go, well, he doesn't like us, we're not going to bother, they would have just blown you off. Kids do that as they get older.
Yeah.
So, I mean, they still loved you enough to just, you know, be spontaneous. And I have to say, if your wife is listening, the other day I heard the greatest compliment to a wife in our pre-interview when you said you married way, way, way up. I thought that was so great.
Well, thank you. It's true. And, you know, we have a saying down south, because obviously a lot of things are focused on football down south. Mm-hmm. And when it comes to my marriage, basically the analogy is that I outpunted my coverage. In other words, I don't have any – I mean, I've way outdone what I was supposed to do, so I'm just going to go with it, you know. But thank you for sharing that.
Well, I thought it was just one of the sweetest things I'd heard a man say, and, you know, Valentine's Day is coming up. I wanted her to know.
Well, don't ever doubt. She will definitely hear this. Don't ever doubt.
Okay. Hi. I hope she does. Well, listen, I mean, you've got this great story. So you came back from your health, but you know what I'm hearing, Jimmy, is that basically, and I know it's an oversimplification, I can't say it enough, but you changed your mind. You changed how you thought about things.
Yes.
Is that basically what happened?
And once I changed my mind, there were opportunities for me to change what was going on around me, because you know, in reality, you know, let me just share on the physical, you know, of going through that struggle physically. I remember I was so mad with the doctors because they couldn't fix me. I was so mad with the situation, but I never just really looked at myself and said, wait a minute, you know,
you're
25, 30 pounds overweight, you know, and at that time, you're smoking two packs of cigarettes a day, and you're complaining about the doctors? You know, what are you thinking, you know? And I remember there was a time, you're talking about my daughters. There was a time with my daughter who I tried to hide the smoking. I was embarrassed, but it's stupid, you know, to do something like that. But I did
it's not
it,
logical.
You know, and
it's
you, not.
It's really not
it's
logical.
Not.
I've never smoked because it doesn't make sense to me to put something on fire into your lips and suck it into your lungs. It's not logical.
I know it stinks. And so here, let me kind of tell you though how I got over it, because you know, finally you do come to your senses at some point. You know what you need to do. My wife came to me and said, you know, your daughter at that time, she was about 11 years old, 10 or 11 years old. She said, your daughter's asking why you smoke. Well, I've been hiding it from her, you know, like she couldn't smell it, like you say, or whatever.
Right.
And there's kind of a point in life there. If you've got to hide something from somebody, it's probably a problem. You know what I mean?
Yeah, so, you kind of know you shouldn't be doing it, or, you know, you don't want to set that example for other people.
Right. Yeah. Yeah. So So I have to have that conversation with my 11-year-old daughter. Well, if you've ever had a child, you know, at some point they always believe you're perfect until you prove them wrong, you know.
Mm-hmm.
And in reality, this was probably the first time that I had really had to sit down and just be mature with her and just own up to something that I, you know. And I remember we were riding down the road. I just remember saying to her, and I said, Libby, I owe you an apology. You know, this just owns me. I don't know what else to say. It's stupid. It's really bothering me. She's crying. I'm crying. Mm-hmm. It's an emotional time again. And, I mean, I don't mean to sound like a big crybaby, but I remember there was something at that moment that said, you've got to stop this. You have got to stop this. And so you better be serious when you do this. But I said to her, and I pulled the car over, and I looked her dead in the eyes, and I said, Libby, I'm fixing to tell you something. I'm about to quit smoking. And if I don't quit smoking, you can question anything I tell you from this moment forward.
Oh,
now,
well,
let me
you,
tell you
really this. Had to step up.
Well, you got to be all in at that point,
mm-hmm.
if you're going to say something like that. And
right.
And here's what I had to do is I had to realize, and I had to get my why I wanted to, and I needed to quit smoking bigger than just I wanted to. Now, here's the thing. When the pains came, and you're talking about sucking. Now, here's what sucks. You're physically, you have withdrawals. My legs ached. My stomach ached.
Really?
My head hurt. Yeah, it is horrible to come through it. But here, in literally my mind, I'm thinking, am I going crazy? You know, it's a withdrawal that you can't even imagine. But when those withdrawals came, the pain that I was experiencing there was nothing when I compared it to the pain I would feel if my daughter questioned anything I said going forward. So, see,
mm-hmm.
I made where the pain was more if I didn't do what I said than if I did. So.
Right.
Those things that we did, and here's what I really realized, too, is because the main reason I smoked, you know, is my dad smoked. It's just kind of what he did. And, you know, the reason why he smoked, probably because his dad smoked. And
you
really
know why I don't
that,
smoke? Because my parents did.
And
I thought
it
was the ugliest
way.
Thing I had ever seen. I can't stand it.
My brother is exactly that same way. But what I realized for me, because it's going to go one of two ways, is that I think things work generationally, if that makes sense. And I realized that if I was going to give my kids the best options and the best ability, that I could either choose to let that generational curse, is what it had been for me, you know. I was either going to pass it down or I was going to cut it clean and it was going to become a generational blessing. Because odds were that if I stopped, odds were a lot higher that my kids would never smoke. And so doing that, I just made that why bigger, you know, than just wanting to. And I think that's critically important when you want to make a change, is to find something that really motivates you, not just a want, but a need, you know.
Well, and I love that you said the why, because you took the time to sit down and examine it, and you made sure that the levels that you were setting up weren't even equal. I mean, you weren't just going to say, okay, I'm going to do this. And, I mean, you made it darn near impossible for you not to go back on your word.
Right.
Which is very smart. But it requires, you have to stop and think about it. You have to give it some real thought. And then you have to go, you know what, I'm big enough to do this. Or my word is no good. And if your word is no good to yourself, what good is it to anybody else?
Yeah, so true. So true, Denise, because, I mean, I know, like with you, with your daughter, I mean, if they know you're good, you're bad, and you're ugly, and if it's a situation where, if I can't be a role model for my kids, how am I going to be effective out in the world? It all starts right there.
Yeah, it really does. And going back to the generational thing, I'm the oldest of a whole mess of kids. I won't tell you how many. I'm the only one who never smoked, ever.
See?
Everybody else in the family smoked. So,
you want to. And probably, you know, there was a lot of stuff that you, as the oldest, have had that you've dealt with, because you probably guarded a lot of those younger ones from a lot of things, too.
Mm-hmm.
I know as the oldest, I did the same. But that's interesting to think, though, that you are the only one that didn't.
Yeah, I was the only one. But, you know, I'm very logical and analytical and linear in my thinking, and it just never made sense to me.
Right.
Yeah, and even at a very young age, I would look at people and go, that's not pretty. That looks icky.
Yeah.
But you know, yeah, everybody has their. I mean, if you want to smoke, I don't care. Just don't do it in my house. That's
right.
I'm not going to lecture anybody on it. Just don't try to do it in my house or my car. We'll get along just fine.
Exactly.
So, you do what you want to do. But listen, you have got this great, great story. And I mean, how did, you went from about nine months to just pulling yourself up off the pavement, basically,
mm-hmm.
to getting back.
Mm-hmm.
And it was a very much a kind of a, I don't know, Jimmy, did you have to, I'm trying to say this without going too deep into
mm-hmm.
religion or anything else, but you really
mm-hmm.
had to go deep, didn't you? I mean, you had to take
mm-hmm.
a bright white light and shine it on yourself and not flinch.
Mm-hmm.
And that
yeah.
had to have been
that,
painful.
It is. It's very painful because the thing is typically it's not when you shine that light on yourself and you evaluate yourself,
mm-hmm.
you realize that it doesn't just affect you. You know,
right.
my decisions were affecting my employees. They were affecting my family. They were affecting my employees' families. You know, it was a situation where it was bigger than me, and there were things that had to be changed. And when I finally, as we stated earlier, got my mind around the fact and just made my mind up that I was going to change,
mm-hmm.
That's when things really began to change around me. Because once I had that purpose, I think purpose is so important, you know.
Yeah.
Once I had a
yeah.
purpose for what I was doing, I formulated an action plan. And once I had that action plan, then I just be honest, sleep, when you're trying to come out of something, sometimes can be overrated. I mean, you need a certain amount of sleep, but
mm-hmm.
I worked my tail off, you know, and was so excited to do it because there was a drive that I didn't want to go back to where I had been just a few months
right.
before. And so it all starts with that evaluating yourself, taking ownership and admitting where you've made mistakes,
mm-hmm.
And just moving and making the changes to make sure that they don't happen again.
Well, you know what, so many people, and that's brilliantly said, but so many people have a very bad habit, and I think it is just a habit, of just kind of wallowing in that rearview mirror.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, they're just
yeah.
constantly looking in that rearview mirror, and I think that's silly. I really do.
It is.
Excuse me, I'm very raspy
yeah.
today, but people do it, and I catch myself wondering if it's just not a really bad habit. You know, if they
is.
Would take the time to do like you did and say, okay, stop, evaluate,
mm-hmm.
move forward, stop, evaluate, move forward.
Right.
Yeah, I think it's mm-hmm. I think it could be a self-discipline thing,
but
I'm
really
not
is.
Sure.
And
okay.
I'll tell you this. I have told some people before this, and it was for me. It was a moment where things began to change. Is I realized that you know what? No matter I spent basically 2 years trying to figure out what I had, you know, why things had happened. I spent 2 years complaining about things or worrying about things, and there was a moment where I just said, you know what? I can't do a thing about my past.
Right, right.
But I've got complete control over my future. And, you know, now there's going to be some effects from what I've been through that are going to carry for a while, but
oh, right, right.
I can control the direction I'm headed in. And it's my attitude and it's my actions. And when I almost gave myself, it was almost I gave myself a day. I said, you know what? Get it all out. You know, complain about who we want. I took a piece of paper
you
out
just wallowed
out.
In it.
I wallowed all in it,
yeah.
just laid in it all day,
that.
You know?
Yeah.
I mean, it was misery, yeah. Sissel, you know?
Yeah.
And I mean,
continental shelves collide. I get that. I've done that. Yeah.
Yes, yeah. And the people that I just, you know, was so angry with, you know, that had just done me wrong, that I had allowed to do me wrong, I wrote them letters and then I ripped them up and I burned them. You know, I didn't want to send
mm-hmm.
them. It was too, you know. But
right.
at the end of that night,
but
when I went
cathartic.
To bed, I said, okay, yes. That night,
yeah.
before I went to bed, I said, when I wake up in the morning, that's my past, and I'm leaving it there. And that next morning, I woke up, and I don't know how it happened or exactly, but whatever that happened overnight, I woke up in the morning. I woke up before my alarm clock went off, and it was like all of a sudden, and literally, I wake up before my alarm clock, and I get up early. I mean, I'm up 4:30
yeah.
every morning. So, but
yeah, me too.
It's, you know, but it's a situation where I don't even need the alarm clock. I wake up excited about what's going on and what I got to do that day. And there's a difference when I would wake up and it would, you know, you all of a sudden you wake up and you realize what you've got that day and it feels like somebody hit you in the stomach. That was the way I lived for so long that once I got to the point where I'm excited to wake up, it really makes a difference in your entire life. It's just all attitude. It all starts with your attitude.
Oh, absolutely. And listen, I reference my grandmother a lot. She's deceased, has been for many years, but she would say, honey, you are what you think. And listen, as a youngster, I had a degree in eye rolling with a minor in sardonic, and I just thought she was simple. I really did. It's like, yeah, Grandma, okay. But guess who was right, and guess who the smart aleck was?
No.
But she was absolutely right. You are what you think. And listen, once I figured that out, kind of like you did, I'm always monitoring my thoughts. You know, I don't let myself get too far into what I would call stinking thinking. You know, it's like, oh, I've got a headache. Oh, my back hurts. Oh, I feel ugly today. No, stop it. It's stop, examine the evidence. Is this true? Of course it's not. Okay, move on. And I do a lot of stopping and starting with my thoughts, but I've had to train myself to stop and examine the evidence. It's very, very important. Because you can talk yourself into a lot of junk. But going to the past, I'll be honest with you, I look at the past for answers sometimes, and I look at the past for lessons, but I don't live there.
No, that's exactly right. You know, and I give you an example. I know people that are older than me that have been divorced for 20 years, and they're still living with that bitterness, you know, and it's like they think they're punishing, you know, exactly, they're punishing that person, and they don't even realize that person went on and got remarried. They're happy. They aren't even thinking about this. And
sad.
It is. And what I found is, you know, for 2 years, basically, I just wallowed in the bitterness, to be honest. It was, I mean, I was like, what in the world is happening, you know? And there was a point where I just had to decide, you know what, instead of getting bitter, I'm going to get better. And I think we each have that choice, you know, of what we're going to do and how we're going to react. You can't always control what happens to you, but you have complete control on how you react to it.
Absolutely.
And if you're always choosing to get better from something instead of bitter, it's always going to make you and move you to that next level.
Absolutely. Okay, so during that 2 years, I'm guessing that, and please excuse my voice, I started getting raspy last night. I was on the phone all day yesterday and all night last night practically, and I don't talk a whole lot, so when I do, my voice just takes a beating.
Anyway,
I don't. I'm actually a very quiet person, believe it or not. But the thing is, I mean, during that 2 years, is that – I'm surprised you're still married. I'll be honest with you. Kudos to your wife. But
you better believe.
Is that when you got sick, and is that when, you know, everything just kind of started crumbling internally? Is that the time frame?
Yeah, and I gotta tell you, you know, the financial bankruptcy that I went through, really, in reality, now looking back, it was more of a outward, I guess you'd say, manifestation of what was going on inside me, if that makes sense, of the bankruptcy
I
had.
It makes perfect
sense. You know, I lost focus on who I was. I lost focus on any kind of purpose for my life. I lost focus on helping others, and it became about me, you know, and consequently, when you do that, luckily, you know, I'm my wife is tremendous. I had a wife that it wasn't that our marriage was in jeopardy because she meant it, you know, and that's who she was, but I could see that what the decisions I was making and the way that I was acting and the person I was becoming was hardening her heart towards me, if that makes any sense. And I think that's the beginning process of when relationships begin to, you know, crumble. And so luckily, you know, I came to my senses, and luckily she was a patient person. But it was when I began to realize it wasn't about me and began to focus on what her wants and needs were that all of mine, you know, were more than provided for. And and now you know, when you go through something, you either come out stronger or you just lose it, you know, and especially in relationships. It either, you know, if you go through something, know that if you can make it through it, you know, you're going to be strong, so much stronger the old analogy of, you know, if you break your arm, once it heals back, that area that broke is stronger than any other part of your arm. It's the same way with my marriage now. You know, we don't necessarily have the weaknesses we had before in the same areas because we were able to work through that brokenness and
right.
to see it heal and become stronger.
That's a great story. I just love your whole story. So, Jimmy, are there a few practical and actionable tips that you can give our audience on how to start the process of bouncing back? Because, look, you're not alone.
Yeah.
I wasn't alone when I had my troubles. Everybody I know, honestly, everybody
right.
I know, no matter how successful they are, has had some point or some spot of trouble in their life. It's just a condition of living.
Mm-hmm.
And,
right.
you know, I think, honestly, sometimes we get caught in a vacuum. We think that nobody knows the trouble we're going through and we're going to power through it and we're going to be okay and nobody's going to know about it, which is nonsense. And we're
right.
tough and, you know, we can do this, we can do this. And all we're doing is sinking a deeper hole, I think.
Yes, yes.
So how
yeah.
do you tell people to kind of pull their head out from underneath their armpit and move on?
Well,
you saw how polite I was there? Wasn't that polite?
Yeah, I think the first thing, you know, that really, like we talked about how the attitude has to change.
Well, yeah.
The thing that I did, and I still do, I did it this morning, is you have to switch to, instead of focusing on the things you're worried about, begin to focus on the things that are around you that you're thankful for. And, it's hard to do in the beginning, but here's an actionable step. And I do it every day. I did this morning. When I get out of bed, my first foot that hits the floor, I say thank. And my second foot hits the floor, I say you. And I begin to, my day, every day, focusing on 5 to 10 things that I'm thankful for, that I'm excited are in my life, you know, and I'll give you a good example. This morning, one of the first things I thought about is I was thankful for the opportunity that there's a possibility that someone that's listening right now is going through a struggle, and somehow through my pain and through my struggle, that they don't have to struggle the way I did.
Mm-hmm.
Now, that's something to get excited about, you know? And so whatever it is that excites you, you know, that's what you should focus on. I believe each of us has something inside us, and we have a talent that nobody had to teach us how to do. It's something that was knit into our being. It's who we are.
Mm-hmm.
And and that's where your purpose is. You know, whatever it is that you're passionate about, find a way to get involved doing that and find a way to grow in that area and find a way, because odds are if it's a true purpose for you, it really probably has more to do with other people and helping them than it does you. And ultimately,
right.
if you help those people, it's going to come back in a multiple you can't even imagine. So
absolutely.
That's what I would do, is just get focused on that. Get focused on those good things. Start your day off in a place of gratitude, and it will set the tone for the entire day.
You know what I do, and it's so funny that you should say that. I'm grateful for everything. I'm grateful for every breath I take. I'm grateful for every hair on my head. I'm grateful for everything. But I always, and you're going to think I'm a nut, but I always say thank you to my water. I love water.
Really?
I drink tons of it.
I do too. That's a great idea.
I love water. It tastes so good. But I always, don't ask me how I started this. I don't even know. Yeah, I mean, I'll take a big old gulp of water from the hose or from this, you know, the faucet or from the refrigerator,
uh-huh.
and I'm like, oh, thank you, and down it goes.
I will start doing that now. So, because
you know
I'm
what?
The same
I have
way.
Great
I don't really
skin.
Drink anything else.
No, I water just tastes so good to me. I don't know what
I
it
know.
Is, but I'll be in a restaurant and I'll say water. Really? Water.
Me too.
Water.
I know. I'm the same way. I know,
but, you know, it's just something that simple. And I had read somewhere, and I'm going to have to paraphrase because I can't quote it exactly, but apparently just the act of gratitude can actually physically change things, and I do believe
uh-huh.
that. And they had taken some really nasty water, and I'll have to look this up and send the quote to you. But they had taken some really nasty water out of a river in a third world country that people should never have put in their mouths
right.
or on their feet or done anything with.
Mm-hmm.
And I guess some monks prayed over it, and it changed the molecules of the water.
Mm-hmm.
I mean,
yeah,
they were able to document that. So apparently I'm not as nuts as that sounded. So I'm just telling you, I'm not that crazy. There's
proof. I mean, I think anybody, if they look back on things when things have happened for the good, because we've all had good times and bad times,
mm-hmm.
when things were good, it started from a place of thankfulness. I really believe,
right.
like you kind of mentioned, that the things we concentrate on, they expand. So in other
words,
if I'm constantly thinking about, oh my gosh, and I'm worried, I find more things to be worried about.
Mm-hmm.
But when I wake
mm-hmm.
up in the morning and I'm concentrating on the things that I'm thankful for, all of a sudden my eyes begin to come open to the things, and there's more things for me to be thankful for. And it just expands out from us. I believe that with all my heart.
Mm-hmm. I agree. And you know, and I know for people who are listening to this or will be listening, and you're just in a horrible mess right now for whatever reasons, you're probably thinking, what in the heck are they talking about? We urge you to just try it. Set aside, deliberately set aside whatever it is that you're worrying about, because probably if you examine the evidence and you're looking at something that you're really worried about, there's probably not a darn thing you can do to change it at that moment. So why continue to poke it with a stick?
Right.
Change your mind and look at something that makes you feel better, that makes you breathe a little bit easier, that makes you want to go outside and play with the dog. I mean, just change your mind.
Mm-hmm.
It's really that simple.
Yeah. I had someone tell me that a younger guy that I was working with, and he's, you know, everything was bad, he said. You know, it's all this. And I said, listen, you got to focus on what you can be positive about. And the first day I told him to, you know, I gave him kind of an action plan on some things I wanted him to do, and I was just, you know, helping him kind of come out of some things he was struggling with. And he, the first day I gave it to him, he said, this is crazy. You're crazy. You know, this won't work. And I said, well, let me ask you this. I said, how's what you're doing working out for you?
Yep.
I mean, don't you think it's about time you try something different? Because I think sometimes we get so in a rut that we don't even realize that we're waking up and doing the same thing that made us miserable the day before. We're doing that today.
Mm-hmm.
And we're
mm-hmm.
expecting it to be different. And that's just crazy. So, you know, if we sound a little crazy, I think that people can hear in our voice that the excitement we have and the difference
we're happy
in our
crazy.
Life. So, yes, I know, that's true. That's true. But you know, I mean, I'll tell you something. I just believe with all my heart that if people will just give it a shot, begin to be thankful, and just begin to be thankful for things around you, wow, your eyes are going to start opening to the other things. Here's a perfect example.
Right.
When about 3 months ago, my wife got a white Buick Rendezvous SUV truck, basically, car, whatever you want to call it. I didn't even know what that was until she got one. I've never heard of it. Yeah, well, let me tell you this. All of a sudden, here's what happened to me, and what's probably fixing to happen to you is, I'm driving down the road.
No, we'll see them. We'll see four of them in a row.
And I'm like, there's a white, is that her? No, that's not her. Wait, there's another white Buick Rendezvous. Wait, there's a, now does that mean that all of a sudden, all these white Buick Rendezvous were there? No, what it is that now I'm conscious to those things around me that I wasn't conscious to before. Absolutely.
Exactly.
So when you begin to focus on that gratitude, and you begin to focus on things you're thankful for, all of a sudden you look up and you're like, wow, how have I missed this and not been thankful for this in my life or this person that has helped me out so much and been there when everybody else left, when it was time to clean up after, everybody's there at the party. When it's time to clean up and there's only one friend left, I need to thank them. Wow, when things were good, everybody was around. When things got tough, boy, they scattered in a hurry.
Yeah.
And who are the ones that were still there? Those are the ones that you should be thankful for and realize that they're there for the good. So there's so much to be thankful for if we just open our eyes to it.
Absolutely. And it can be something small like, you know, your dog walked over and licked the back of your hand. Somebody still loves you. It can be that tiny, seriously. But focus on that, and all of a sudden you see other things to be grateful for or alive to. Now, I know that there's seven steps. Can you just kind of give me a quick, you know, rundown on the titles of the seven steps? And then I have a question about one of them.
Yeah, let me
two of them, actually.
I want, I'll tell you what, I'm going to hit a couple of them, and then I'll be glad to answer any questions you have on any of them. Obviously, it all starts like any type of bouncing back from anything, any type of reconciliation, any type of overcoming addiction, any type of anything, spirituality even, it starts with taking responsibility and admitting where you've made mistakes. Quit blaming other people. Step up and take responsibility. Understand the mistakes you've made. Take responsibility for them, and then make adjustments. You know, and then it really comes to you have to begin to flood your mind with positivity. Focus on the things that you're grateful for, and those things will expand. And then once you go to the next step, what you've got to do is you've got to begin to put together an action plan on how you're going to get out of there, something that's measurable, something that is achievable, something that you can have a definitive time frame, some goals. Then if you're going to go through that process, you really need to walk through it with someone that maybe either has been through it, that you can find as a mentor, as a friend, or a coach that will help you walk through the process, somebody that can see the forest when all you can see is the trees, I guess you'd say. Somebody that's going to give you advice that you trust. And then once you do that, you've got to make changes. You know, ultimately, you have to make changes and move in that direction. And then the exciting part is when you begin to come through it, even if you aren't through it yet, there's somebody that's a few steps behind that you can encourage, and that's when we turn our mess into our message. And that's when it gets exciting, where you can help other people where they don't have to struggle the way that you struggled. And you know, I have friends that have been through divorces that now they see somebody and they encourage them and say, listen, I know what you're going through right now is so tough. You can't even think that this is possible, but I'm just telling you, I've been there and I've come out of it. You know, when you have that ability to share that with somebody, it gives them hope. I think we've almost got to see before we can be. And so who is it that needs to see you come through what you're in or what you've already been through so that they can then come through theirs with less struggle and less pain than you did? And when we focus on those needs of others, then here's what's great. One other thing is when we're focused on helping others, no matter how bad things are around us, we forget about what we're going through. And we grow in strength and in encouragement by what's happening good for them, and it spills over into what's going on with us. So that's kind of a nuts and bolts, obviously, of it, but I'd be glad to answer any questions on any of the specific steps.
Well, I like what you say about coaches and mentors because, look, as entrepreneurs, and this is a big segment of our population right now, and I hope it's a growing segment of our population, but the thing is with most entrepreneurs, at least in my experience, is that we are workaholics. And in my case and in your case, we're high-functioning workaholics, which you know, means we understand that we do have to carve out time to do things with people and other, other things. We have to actually make a conscious decision to make those choices. But here's the thing. When I first started out, I'm a web developer by trade, and then I kind of added the whole virtual assistants and then online business management to my portfolio, so to speak, because it just made sense. And I've been in business since 2000. I'm 13 years old now. But, the thing is, for the longest kind of time, I made the mistake of thinking I could do it all. And I was working literally in a vacuum. I didn't have a mentor. I didn't have a coach. You know, this was back before websites could do the marvelous things they could do now. And I was just kind of flinging things at walls and hoping it would stick. It worked, oddly enough. Apparently, I had enough, stick-to-itiveness and, enough work ethic, I guess. But it did work for me, but it shouldn't have, is what I'm saying.
So
I think what you're saying about finding a coach or a mentor or multiples is an excellent idea for so many reasons, not just for entrepreneurs, but, for people who are struggling at whatever they're struggling in their life.
Yeah.
So absolutely. Where do you go to find that, though?
You know, obviously, here's the thing is, and I've had people say, well, I've got my spouse. I got to be honest. Sometimes you need somebody that's not in the same foxhole as you're in.
And that's what I would think.
And whether it be a friend, a mentor, a coach, I'll tell you a little bit about each of those. But here's the best example I can tell you about that is, when there is a war basically the first thing the enemy tries to do is cut off communication. They want the soldier that's in the middle of the fight, the one that is out on the field, to be completely isolated. Because that soldier, if he only can deal with what he sees in front of him, he's going to make different decisions than if he's got communication from somebody that can see the whole field, the battlefield.
Mm-hmm.
So here's what a mentor, a coach, or a person does is they give you a broader view of what's really going on. They have the ability to step back and see things that we can't see when we're in the middle of the fight. And so what happens is you get out there, and like you say, you just keep doing over and over and over until you find something to work. Well, how much better would it have been if you could have had someone that maybe has done something similar to what you've done that could sit there and could, you could talk with them on a weekly basis and you could trust and you could say, I'm thinking about doing this. What do you think? And they would give you sound advice. They would give you wisdom.
Right.
Think of it this way. If somebody is going through a divorce, the last person they need to be talking to is their bitter friend that's in the middle of divorce also. I mean,
okay.
Really, you know? Because they're just going to be bitter together. But here's the thing.
I know.
Find that person that's in a that went through a divorce that's now in a happy marriage, and they can say, listen, I see what you're doing here. This whole bitterness thing, I'm just telling you, it doesn't work. I did it.
Mm-hmm.
You know, here's
it
what I did.
It eats you alive.
It eats
right.
you alive. So, see,
right.
when you find somebody that's done what you do in business, you know, I mean, I've had a business and a life coach pretty much my whole life. You know, and at times I'll have two in two different areas of my life, you know. And the main reason and the benefits of it that I've had is that it saves time, headaches, heartaches, and it gives me balance. I've got a guy that I've been working with for years, and I know you do too, that know when this guy tells me something, I know where he's coming from and that it may hurt a little bit when he says it. He'll say things to me like this. He'll say, now you want to do that. Is that because of your pride wants to do it, or is that because that's what you know you feel like is best for you to do? Wow, that'll cut you to the core, you know? But that evaluation is so important. And so he saves me time, money. It is an investment for me to have that business coach and have that person. And, you know, it's a situation where I can't imagine going through life without having that extra set of eyes now because I just know how valuable it's been for me.
Oh, you and me,
and
both. I wish I had done it much earlier. But, you know, there's no point in worrying about it. But,
right.
you know, I stop and evaluate, and, man, I would be so much further ahead. But, oh, well, I'm on the road, so
that's right. That's right. That's right. It doesn't have to be a coach either. I mean, it can be, you know, someone, a mentor. Obviously, when I first got out of college, I had mentors that I didn't pay, but they just took an interest in me. And, you know, what's fun now is that I'm at a point where actually, you know, I've got a group of guys that I've got some that I mentor, I've got some that I professionally coach. And just to see, I get as much out of seeing them grow as I do out of seeing me grow, which is kind of odd. I never, you know, and so it's so fun to see the lights go off with people. So, you know, if you've been through something, I want to encourage you to be a mentor to somebody, you know. Encourage somebody
that's
going through what you've been through, and it's going to heal your wound a lot faster if you help somebody else get through whatever you went through.
Right. Well, Jimmy, do you mind sharing with us the most single destructive thing that people do that keep them from bouncing back or finding a mentor or getting out of their own way?
Yeah. The biggest thing, Cindy, really, is that that we surround ourselves with people that keep us from moving forward. You know, I'm not saying people need to get rid of all their friends, but maybe if you know the old saying, if you're the smartest one of your friends, you need to get some more friends. If you the friends and the relationships that got you in a mess are probably not going to be the ones that get you out of a mess. And that's so difficult, you know, to understand that. I'll give you one example of this, and it's tough, but when my dad, when I was growing up, he would take us, I lived along the coast, we would go catch these blue crabs in this little shallow water area that was called Crab Island. It was about waist-deep water, and there'd be crabs everywhere. Well, we would drift across that in the boat. We would turn the boat off, and it would drift across this little shallow area, and he would point the crabs out, and myself, my brother, and a couple other of our friends, we would go out with crab nets, and we'd catch these crabs. And he would have a wash tub tied up behind the boat that would just float behind a boat, and we would dump the crabs in there. Well, we would fill that old wash tub, the old tin wash tubs, if you've ever seen those.
Mm-hmm.
We would fill it all the way to the top.
I use it
yeah.
as a planter.
Yeah, yeah. Well, we would fill that thing completely up with crabs all the way to the top. And I asked my dad one day, I said, Daddy, where's the top to this? These crabs, all they got to do is just go to the side and they can get out. And
he said, they don't know.
They don't. You just watch them and see what happens. So I did. Well, one crab finally is sitting there, and he's like, we're heading to our demise. I'm getting out of here. And he crawls to the side, and he begins to just tip over into the water, and he's inches from being free. And one of those other crabs reaches up
pulls
with his
back.
Pinchers.
Yep.
Pulls him right back in it.
Right.
And it's so
I'm a
much
crabber.
So
I go crabbing,
wiggling.
Too, I know. Yep.
And the crab is wiggling, trying to get out, and that crab will not let go. As a matter of fact, when we would boil the crabs and we would dump them out after we had boiled them, that crab would hold on to that other crab to the death
mm-hmm.
to not let that crab get out of there. What's sad is that sometimes we don't even realize it, but insecurities and people around us, they don't want us to get out of what we're in, because if they do, it shows their inadequacies. And so I think
yeah.
it's critical to look around and evaluate the people you spend time with, because sometimes those relationships are holding you back. They're actually physically holding you back from getting out of the mess you're in. And that's difficult with longtime friends to realize that and see it sometimes.
Yeah, yeah.
But surround yourself with some people that are going to encourage you instead of pull you down. And when you begin to do that, that's the biggest mistake people make, is they just hold on to the past so much that they can't move into their future.
Mm. And that makes perfect sense. And you see this all the time in people who have quit drinking, or people
yes.
who are trying to lose weight, and all of a sudden mama's trying to feed them chocolate cake, or you know, their friends are,
come on,
just one beer won't hurt you. And say,
right.
Yeah, it will too.
Yes,
it will,
exactly.
Trust me.
Exactly.
So,
yeah,
you see it all the time. And, you know, honestly, water seeks its own level. If you're hanging around with people that are just, you need to really take a look at who you're surrounding yourself with. You really do.
Mm-hmm.
And
mm-hmm.
then figure out
yeah.
why you're surrounding yourself with those types of people.
Right. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
You know, some of them are really good and some of them are not.
It makes you comfortable. You know?
Well, I think that's it. Yeah.
And there's not a lot of growth and comfort a lot of times, unfortunately.
No. Okay, I love the subtitle of your... You know, we're running out of time. We've only got 3 minutes.
Oh, okay.
This is crazy.
Wow, that's
You've got
good.
To come back.
Yeah.
I mean, you've got to come back
to.
At some point, because I have a ton of things to ask you. Okay, but the subtitle of your book is How to Bounce Back in Life So You Can Do More, Have More, and Be More. How did you come up with that?
You know, when you first hear it, you think it's financial, but it's really not. And what I found
I really did.
Yeah.
Once I started reading
and
it, I went,
Yeah, it's really not, because here's the thing is when you're in the middle of something, you know, the first thing you've got to do is you've got to take massive action. You've got to change some things.
Mm-hmm.
You've got to take action. So you have to do more. Any time that I have done more, I mean, it always results in having more. But here's the difference is, if you do it right, all of a sudden you become more, you be more, you become somebody that uses the resources and the opportunities that they have for others instead of themselves. You
mm-hmm.
be more as far as in your community and in your family. You be more in your workplace, and you become something that is more in line with your purpose than just financial. I mean, it's really, that's going to come and go, but those relationships and the way that you affect people around you is where it's really at. And I think
mm-hmm.
at our core, all of us want to be an inspiration to others. And if you're in the middle of a struggle now, the best way you can be an inspiration to others is, as bad as and tough as it can be, is just keep moving forward. And when there's
mm-hmm.
going to come a point, you're going to wake up and you're going to realize that struggle you went through was all worth it, because here you are now and you're right on line with your purpose. And for me, and like we talk about in the book, your mess is going to become your message. So just stay focused on moving forward.
I love that. I have a quick question that goes back to something we were talking about earlier. You said that, you know, once you came out of the bankruptcy court and you kind of looked around and you wallowed in it for a while and, you know, you really kind of made that mess of your life, then you started making some pretty dramatic changes. Were there any systems that you used? Did you set up any systems so you could kind of track your own progress?
Yeah, and with the time we've got, it's going to be hard to say that now. But I mean, obviously,
yeah, and let's go.
But
we can do it the next show, but I just wanted to know.
I'd love to. There's no doubt it's a system. You have to have a system.
Okay.
You have to have a plan of action in order to achieve and to walk out of it. But, yes, I'll be glad to share that another time. Or they can get the book and it's in there.
Well, and I was going to say that they need to go to the book, and you also have some really great videos on your site. So tell people where they can find you.
Yeah, absolutely. I did 7 free videos on each of the steps, and you can go to the website Overcoming It, because I think we all have something that we need to overcome, overcomingit.com, and I'll email those out to you over a 6-7 day period. You'll get those videos, and they're just short, 3 to 5 minutes with an action step at the end. So if you're in a struggle, great free resource, or they can find the book by going to Amazon, the Kindle version or the paperback version. Just look me up, Jimmy Burgess with a Y, or What Just Happened, and the book will pop up on Amazon.
Mm-hmm. It's a great book. I mean, it really is. Thank you for sending it, Jimmy. Jimmy,
thank
you for being here today. I have thoroughly enjoyed it. You've given us a glimpse into your life and the struggles and how you overcame it, and I think it's very inspirational. And I know that the audience appreciates it as much as I do.
Thank you for having me, Denise. I really do appreciate it.
Oh, seriously. You sold me with that email. It was brilliant. It was absolutely. I was like, wow. We will be seeing more of you. But anyway, the show will be available for download in about an hour. And excuse my voice. And you can also find us on iTunes. Just type in our names, Denise Griffiths and Jimmy Burgess. And I will see you next week. Jimmy, thank you so much.
All right, thanks again. Have a great weekend.
You too.
You can find Denise Griffiths at yourofficeontheweb.com or at gottagovirtualnow.com. Thank you for joining us on Your Partner in Success Radio.